There is a lot of concern in our hemisphere over a new and rapidly spreading health threat. I'm speaking of the Zika virus. It can cause brain abnormalities in the unborn and paralysis in some adults. It's much more prevalent south of the border right now, but there are many thousands of people who have gotten that virus, and I understand at least two cases have been reported in Illinois. This time of year, a lot of people travel to warm weather climates, the Caribbean, Mexico, South America. They could get infected there and bring the virus back home with them. What's the potential here? Joining me in studio is Dr. Alexander Garza, epidemiologist and associate dean of public health practice at St. Louis University. He's also the former medical director at the Department of Homeland Security. Dr. Garza, thanks so much for being with us. Great
Thank
to have you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, let me read you something they've just put on my screen here. The New York Times has just posted that the World Health Organization, which has been meeting today, has declared the Zika virus a global emergency.
Right. So, as you said, the WHO, they have different levels that they discuss these different disease spreads. And so they were meeting today in an emergency meeting. And what most likely, I haven't seen that news, but most likely what they declared is it was a public health emergency of international concern, which is really it puts countries that are signatory on this notice that they should be doing certain things, looking for the disease, surveillance, all sorts of other measures.
Well, how does it strike you, and what is the potential here?
So the potential here is going to be somewhat I think CDC got it right when they said it's going to be somewhat limited. And the reason for that is although it's prevalent south of the border, the North America is a little bit different environments for a couple of reasons. One is the mosquito that spreads this disease down in Brazil is not as prevalent, especially here in Missouri. It is along the Gulf states in the warmer climates, the Aedes aegypti. Mosquito, but that mosquito doesn't live here in the Midwest. There is another form of mosquito that is thought to transmit the virus as well, but it's not understood how effectively it spreads it that does live in Missouri. But there's a big question mark on how well that would do. The second one is the environment in the United States is much different than in Brazil. And so there's not as much problems with vector control here in the United States. Of course, the majority of people here have air conditioning and stay inside during the summer. And then the disease, the virus itself is just not as prevalent here, or it isn't prevalent here as it is down in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the concern certainly now and perhaps in the future is maybe not the mosquito if it's not so prevalent here,
right.
Is the fact that a lot of people travel in the part of the world where it is prevalent
exactly.
And can bring the disease back.
Exactly. And so I think that's what most people are trying to work through right now is travelers that go down to Central and South America that can get infected by the virus and then come back to the United States. Now, depending on what time of year it is, whether it's during the summertime when we have more mosquitoes out where they would be able to feed on an infected individual and then transmit the disease. So that's what the concern is how much of a spread will occur because of that mechanism, people coming back with the disease, having the mosquito, and then being able to transmit it from an infected person to a non-infected person.
I mentioned at the outset that there are two reported cases in Illinois, and I think I saw, you probably know better than I do, that there are some 30-plus cases that have been found in this country. That's not very many. But
no.
What is the potential for passing that along? I mean, can you – isn't it so infectious that if you are on the same airplane or on the same bus or whatever that you could catch it?
So – that really relies on a couple of things. So it will depend on the amount of virus in circulation, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So right now there hasn't been any virus that's been transmitted naturally in the United States. It's all been cases that have come back from Central and South America. But potentially a mosquito who feeds on an infected individual can transmit it to another person. And this risk will continue to go up just, you know, mathematically, it's going to keep going up.
I'm thinking person to person.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so just from a probability point of view, it's more than likely going to happen somewhere in the United States, most likely probably in the southern portion of the United States. But it will increase. So the question is how much, though, and then how easy is it to prevent the transmission from occurring? So what I usually tell people is it all comes down to risk, right? What's your personal risk and what's the risk to the community? So the risk of it being very widespread in the United States, I think, is fairly low, just from the factors that I discussed before about controlling the mosquito population, not having a whole lot of virus in circulation, and most people not being exposed to mosquitoes to begin with. And so I think that risk is fairly low. But also you have to consider which population you're talking about. And so for people like you and I, we could have either no infection because around 80% of people will have no signs or symptoms of infection, even if they are infected by the virus. And even if we do, it's a pretty self-limited disease process. We may feel bad. We may get a rash. You know, we might run a fever, have a headache, things like that, but it'll go away. But we're not the population that we're worried about, right? So right. We're really worried about females, especially childbearing age or that are pregnant. And so that's the population that we have to make sure that we're ensuring that we're decreasing the risk to them as much as we can.
Would this involve quarantine at the two cases in Illinois, which you may or may know anything about? Would they be quarantined, do you think?
No. Not so much. Those cases that that came back, so they had acquired the disease from Central or South America. I forget which countries they had traveled to, but they've already acquired the virus, and so quarantining them wouldn't make a difference. And the other challenge with quarantine as well is, and we saw this, you know, with other outbreaks that we've had to deal with. It's who do you quarantine then? Because if 80% of the people don't have signs or symptoms, mm-hmm. there's really no practical reason to quarantine anybody.
By the way, I've just advised here in connection with what we talked about at the very beginning, the general director of WHO mm-hmm. says the Zika virus is, as you said, a public health emergency of international concern, as you
Correct.
Suspected they would say, I should say.
Correct. Yeah, and I think, you know, the WHO is coming mm-hmm. off the heels of the Ebola crisis where they were criticized for not responding quick enough. And so I think that probably had a little – and not that this wasn't the right decision. I think it was the right decision. But they've definitely been at the forefront now, I think, more so than they were in the past.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the reasons we're talking about this today is the fact that everybody's talking about this today.
Yeah.
You can't turn on a television set or a radio and not hear about the Zika virus. Do you think that's a good thing to have so much publicity? People are thinking this, I believe, in terms of Ebola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's good and bad. And so on the good side, it does get people to understand that we live in a global society and that disease can spread across the ocean, you know, in a fairly rapid rate. And so nobody is immune to diseases that are occurring in far-off places that we should be aware of those and that we should be thinking about how we can prevent disease from spreading, not just in the United States, but in countries across the sea as well. And so it does us a lot of good to help other nations deal with emerging infectious disease because eventually, as we've seen, you know, with many other infectious diseases, it's going to make its way to our country, whether we want it to or not. Now, on the bad side, you know, one of the things that you really have to do when you're trying to communicate about infectious disease or any sort of health emergency is making sure you're not pushing it over into anxiety and panic and drastic measures. And, you know, we saw with the Ebola crisis how it did become a little dramatic at times, and I think it pushed some people over to the other side that we really didn't want to be on. And so messaging that people need to be vigilant, aware, understand what's going on without causing undue panic amongst people. That's the balance.
Well, of course, the thing that has caught everyone's attention is the abnormality it causes in unborn children.
Right.
That, I gather, is relatively rare.
Still relatively rare. The challenge is so the first challenge is we don't know for sure that Zika does cause this problem. We have some information that leads us to believe that. But if you'll notice on all the CDC statements and things like that, they'll still say, well, we're still not exactly sure. But assuming that it is, even people that are infected, as we said, the majority of them don't get sick. But the same thing with the pregnant women, that a minority of those cases do result in the microcephaly. But the challenge is that that's a you know, that's a lifelong issue, right? And so if a child is born with microencephaly, it's not that there you can do any you know therapy, magic therapy, or things that's going to reverse the condition. It's a lifelong condition, and it puts a huge burden, especially on impoverished females, you know, south of the border and in Latin American countries. And so it's not just a problem of today with the microencephaly, but it's going to have a long tail on it as well.
These are children who could live a long life, but an abnormal life.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, I think that's sort of it hasn't been, I think, as well publicized as some of the other, you know, the more dramatic things. But this is going to be affecting a generation of women and a generation of children that are affected.
I understand. In Brazil, I think they're even advising women not to get pregnant until 2018.
Correct.
I mean, that's something kind of hard to enforce something.
Right.
Like
so
that.
If you think about that from a longitudinal point of view, there's going to be a couple of years where you're not going to have, you know, if you play it out over time, where you're not going to have a couple of years of people going into adulthood and going into college and supporting the economy. Sure. And so it does have a ripple effect.
Right. I want to open our phone lines. People have questions about this, and I know they do. They can give us a call at 382-8255 or email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org or give us a tweet at STL on air. We have a couple of emails here I'll read to you.
Sure.
One is something that we've talked about but apparently is not quite clear for one gentleman. Robert writes, I'm a little bit unclear if the virus can be transmitted person to person other than through a mosquito bite, for instance, sexually transmitted or coughing on someone, et cetera. Please clarify.
Right. So that's a great question, and it's one that's been written about. So right now, the vast majority of cases are transmitted by mosquito. So the mosquito will bite somebody that has an acute infection, has a blood meal, and then goes and bites somebody else who is uninfected and transmits the virus that way. There has, though, been a case report of transmission via sexual contact. It was a single case, and so I think people are starting to look into it more and more. There has been discovery of the Zika virus within semen, and so that's what is postulated as the route of exposure.
Is the Zika virus brand new?
It's not brand new. It was discovered in the mid-century in Africa. It circulated around Africa, went to the Far East, into Polynesia, and then eventually made its way to Central and South America. There, a lot of people are speculating that it was brought to the continent by the World Cup, which, again, plays into the Olympics coming up in Rio de Janeiro. Right. And so there's a lot of discussion about what's going to occur to prevent infection when you have this gathering of people from all around the world that are going to be coming to Rio.
What are the kinds of things that could be done?
Well, you know, there's going to have to be vector control. So and that's a tough thing to do. So standing water, getting rid of standing water, using insecticides, you know, and then a lot of public education. You know, but Rio is a resort town. You know, people like to go to the beaches and hang out, and so it's going to be tough.
It's going to, you know, with all the money that's been spent to get ready for these Olympics and what it means, it could be disastrous for them.
Yeah, it could be.
Is it time to buy some DEET stock?
Time to buy some DEET stock. I forget who makes. I think it's Johnson & Johnson makes off, but I think certainly the message will be will be more resonated now with using insect repellent, making sure you're protecting it, especially to, again, getting back to personal risk. So especially with people that are pregnant or childbearing age.
Let's take a call. Cindy joins us from Town and Country. Cindy, you're on the air with Dr. Alexander Garza.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Here's my question. Since Zika virus is spread by mosquitoes like malaria is, since we have international programs in place like the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria, wouldn't supporting programs like that, which provide bed nets to people in poverty, would supporting those programs and asking our government to support that like we do every year for appropriations, would that also have the effect of fighting the Zika virus as well?
Right. That's a great question. And I think you bring up an excellent point that malaria kills more and more people worldwide than Zika virus will ever do. And it's a much more prevalent public health issue. So I think it gets back, your question gets back to, we need to be supporting programs that help other countries with emerging infectious disease because it's no longer an infectious disease problem of a single country. They quickly become global problems. And so as we used to say in the government, we'd rather play the away game than the home game, meaning we'd rather take care of problems where they are. And we saw the same thing with Ebola and other infectious disease problems. So I think you're right on in that we should be helping other countries deal with infectious disease problems in their own countries. One thing, because it's the right thing to do, but secondarily, because it protects all of us when we do that.
Speaking of the government, we have an email from Dana here saying that Zika is only one of the bad diseases carried by these pests. Right. Why don't governments release genetically modified versions to help eliminate, at least dramatically cut down, the numbers of these mosquitoes?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I don't know if you've saw the press recently about a company that's doing exactly that. That's releasing they genetically modify the male mosquito, so the female is the one that's the biting mosquito. But genetically modified male mosquitoes to essentially breed with the females to lessen their ability to spread viruses. And so, it's an interesting concept. I think you also have to think about what are the issues going down the road when you're releasing genetically modified organisms, but I think it's a fascinating concept.
Right. One quick call before we have to say goodbye. Rosalind joins us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Rosalind.
Hello.
Go ahead, quickly, please.
Hi. Yes, I'm traveling to Savannah, Georgia this summer, particularly June, and should I have any other additional precautions that I take with me or use other than the basic mosquito repellent?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think we're going to probably be asked that more and more as time goes on. So I think the basic mosquito repellent, especially this time of year, just making sure of your surroundings, so wearing long sleeves indoors as much as possible. So it's the winter time as well, so it's not as much mosquitoes. But I think taking those basic precautions that the CDC has recommended on their website, and I think you should be fine.
Okay.
Have a good trip, Rosalind. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I listened to Dr. Fauci the other day, who is well known and is getting a lot of airtime these days because of his expertise in this area. And he says it's going to take probably 2 years before a vaccine might be available. Do you think so?
Vaccines are tricky things to develop and build, and they're expensive as well. It's not so much as coming up with the vaccine, but then it's all the testing that goes along with it. And so making sure that, first of all, it's effective, that takes quite a while. And then making sure it's safe as well, because, you want to make sure that you're getting the right vaccine and that it's not causing any other side effects, things like that. And so vaccines do take a while, and they're very expensive to develop.
But you would think the pharmaceutical world would be on this, I mean, if it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, you would think so. The challenge with emerging infectious diseases is that they usually occur in countries that are poverty-stricken. And so the market is really tough for those. And so that's a lot of times where the government will step in and assist with funding and stuff, especially if it's a public health issue, where they'll supply some of the funding.
Only a few seconds left. The World Health Organization is concerned. People are concerned. The media is concerned. I detect a certain calm in you about all of this.
Well, again, I think you have to boil it down to risk, right? And so in some ways it's easy for me because I'm a middle-aged male, and so my risk is fairly low. But when you incorporate all those different factors in the United States, and are they the same as they were in South America? No, they're not. We're a much different country, and I think we have other resources available to us. But I would say that I would still want people to appreciate it for what it was and to be cautious.
All right. Well, Dr. Alexander Garza, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
And bringing us up to speed on the Zika virus. Thanks. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the new Concordance Academy, which seeks to help incarcerated adults transition into productive lives upon their release. Also talking about kids in the middle. Archived versions of the program available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.